Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslovsky. I am declaring that it's time to whip up a batch of your favorite new recipe. So grab some dreams, get a pinch of motivation, snag a heaping helping of action, and let's mix them all together, shall we? This is episode number 36. Howdy doody, my friend. Thank you for listening to this episode and every other episode you have or will tune into. I do not need a holiday season to remind me how grateful I am that you're giving me your time and attention. Now it's my turn to pay you back with what could become an all-time favorite episode of Smart and Simple Matters. But before we get into the grooviness, I want to let you know that I'm coming off two American Thanksgiving celebrations in November. And if double the pleasure, double the fun isn't enough, each Thanksgiving celebration was combined with another celebration on top of it. The first was when my wife Melinda and I hosted my son Grant's birthday party in the middle of November when he turned 3 years old. Man, the food, the family, and the party explosion in the living room was something to behold. The second Thanksgiving was on the traditional last Thursday of November and was blended with a Hanukkah celebration at my parents' house. Even though I'm now an atheist, I grew up Jewish and definitely don't mind going over to my parents' place to light candles in the menorah and have some of my mom's latkes. My mom's latkes, also known as potato pancakes. This year, though, I brought over some coconut oil for my mom to fry the latkes in, and they were delicious. I'll give you updates later this month, December 2013, if you're listening to this in the future, on what's going on with the Simple Rev event that I have brewing and the timing on experience curating the book being published. But I really want to get right into the main part of the episode because my guests, Warren and Betsy Talbot, are going to steal the show regardless of how much or what I say before and after they talk. There's a special gift for you at the end of the show, though, and I'm stoked to offer it up for you to unwrap. But first, get ready for Warren, Betsy, and me to just really run the gambit on topics, from learning why wearing a sock tie and sweater vest in middle school can make you stronger, it's funny just saying that, to how to save $11,000 to visit Antarctica. This is as intentionally wild as I can get. Fair warning, there's a lot of fun and insight ahead. So proceed with caution or reckless abandon. Totally your choice. Here we go. I admit, I had trouble coming up with the right words for an intro of my guest today. Fantastic? Vibrant? Radical, as in the traditional definition, or maybe the 1980s surfer style definition of awesomeness? I gotta say, call them what you like, but Warren and Betsy Talbot are memorable. They quit their corporate gigs 3 years ago and set sail, sometimes literally, on a journey around the world. But this wasn't a forget everybody else while we go off and have fun kind of journey. The Talbots found a path to freedom and in the process discovered new versions of simplicity and organization that people who look nothing like them can still benefit from. They have jointly published two popular books, Dream, Save, Do, and Getting Rid of It, and Betsy has a solo act of her own in a book called Strip Off Your Fear. You can find this seriously groovy couple at their online headquarters, marriedwithluggage.com, writing hilarious and inspiring stuff about, well, I guess lots of helpful topics. They also have a growing podcast called An Action Plan for Dreamers, and most recently, Warren and Betsy created an online course called Declutter Clinic to help you streamline your physical, emotional, and mental environment. Maybe you can tell I am pumped up to have these two on the show. Welcome, you guys.
Hey, Joel. Hey. I want you to introduce me every time I walk into a room.
We're just going
to
have you. You're our official crier now. Congratulations.
Cool. I'll record something for you after the fact, and you can just carry it around with you and play it anytime you need to introduce yourself to people.
Great.
Well, I'd love to start with you two, and you each can answer this one separately or combined if you like, but I always start out with the seeds of awesomeness. Helping people listening understand who you are, why you are what you are right now, today. And a lot of that is foundational. It starts even going back to childhood. So could each of you tell us maybe one or two things about your environment growing up or some kind of transformational experience you had when you were younger that helps us get you a bit?
All right. I don't want any fights on this because what I'm about to say is the truth, truth, and nothing but the truth. I have the best mother in the world. I really do. And the reason I have the best mother in the world is because I grew up in a really conservative environment in a very small town in the United States. And I was really restricted in a lot of ways. But my mom snuck it around and got me an adult library card. And from the age of like 10, I was able to read anything I wanted to uncensored. And that, for someone who didn't have Google back then, didn't have the internet, didn't have anything, it opened up the world to me. And ever since then, I have been able to indulge my curiosity in every single way imaginable. And I think that it has made me a more interesting and more interested person.
So the library card was the key moment in your youth, huh? Or one of them.
The library card and a parent who trusted me to go after the things that I wanted to and to look into the things that interested me and didn't limit me. And when I had questions about things, you know, she was really good at parroting some of those questions back at me so that I had to start thinking for myself. And I really appreciate having a mother who did that for me.
How about you, Warren?
For me, there are so many defining things that you look at in your life, but I the funniest one for me that I think I look at each and every day is I think I was in third grade, and I started revering Alex P. Keaton from Family Ties. Many people may be too young to remember that, but he was this guy who was highly conservative, who always wore a sweater vest and a sock tie and was very driven, even at a young age. That taught me to be driven, and I started wearing a sock tie and sweater vest to school in middle school, and I will tell you, that is the best way to get picked on and beat up, especially if you were short. I had everything that a bully needed, but what it taught me was the importance of actually staying driven and focused in my life, and I didn't care what people thought about me. I was focused on what I wanted to accomplish. Now, I've done some amazing things, not just in the last 3 years, but in the course of my life. And I find that it's always because I stayed focused on what I wanted to achieve. And I can always trace it back to that moment, walking to school with my sock tie. That was a changing and defining aspect for me as an individual.
As his wife, I have to say that I'm really glad that he has this drive and this focus, but I am equally glad that he no longer wears the sweater vest and the sock tie.
Well, I tell you what, you can be plenty tall. I gave the bullies all that they needed just from my neck. My neck has always been about, 7 or 8 inches long. And you were short, Warren. I was tall. And that was enough for bullies. Don't really need any excuse to pick on people. They're going to find something regardless of what you have. And it's that kind of challenge. You know, Betsy, you were talking about growing up in a small conservative town where a lot of people had a lot of limitations. And some of them, they didn't even realize the bubble that they were in. What kind of a challenge was that for you to live in a little bit of a bubble, but yet have glimpses of what was possible through your mother and through your library card? How did you struggle with that?
Well, you know, it was hard for me because I was trying to reconcile what I had been taught growing up and the environment that I lived in with the feelings I had inside that didn't quite go with any of that. As a matter of fact, it didn't go with it at all. And, you know, I would think I'm going to get married and I'm going to have children and I'm going to live in a white, you know, in a house with a white picket fence. And inside my body is screaming out, you know, but what about, you know, Gloria Steinem needs you and Erica Jong's writing about sex and you've got to go change the world. And, you know, all of those things. It was so hard to live inside my head during those years. And I think it's part of it is because the internet wasn't around for me. But the moment it did come around, this was, you know, when I started working online in 1999, I was in my late 20s. And at that time when it did open up, that's when I took off. And I think that's the beautiful thing about, education, knowledge, satisfying your curiosity. Once you start doing that and you see the options that are out there, there's really nothing to stop you, no matter what your environment is.
Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree with that one. And Warren, it sounds like you were galvanized by this experience. I watch Family Ties too. Great show. Woo-hoo. And you could not have picked too many better role models than Alex B. Keaton. I commend you for that one. But it sounds like being driven and then being picked on just kind of galvanized you to focus even more intensely. But did you have any kind of initial struggles in terms of wondering whether you were on the right path, or was it always just very clear to you?
It was always really clear to me. I knew it was within like a few months of kind of realizing that this was my hero, if you will, that I stated to my mom that I was going to college. It was a couple years later, so now I'm 13 and I decided what I was going to major in. You know, I had already defined kind of what my life was going to look like. And I started putting deadlines and goals for myself. And what it taught me was I feel like I was more galvanized because not so much because of the bullying, but because I saw what was possible to be accomplished when you put ideas and concepts out there and deadlines associated with them. And so I was, you know, well, of course I was going to go to college, and of course I was going to get a business degree, and of course I was going to, you know, go and work for, you know, some big corporation. That was just what I wanted to do, and I was going to make it happen. And I saw what a lot of hard work could mean for that. And I put my mind to it. And so I don't know necessarily that the bullying changed it. It just was a byproduct when you decide to act that way, or more importantly, dress that way.
Gotcha. It's kind of interesting. I just fell into corporate work. I graduated from college, and I won't say that I didn't have any ambitions, but I certainly didn't have any direction. I didn't have any goals. And I took the first opportunity that was presented to me, working at a large financial company in operations, sending rich people's money all the way around the world. And I know you two definitely had corporate days for a long time. And Warren, you were talking about giving yourself deadlines. I would love for people to understand, for the folks who aren't familiar with their story, because things weren't always so simple and purpose-filled for you two. Your corporate days weren't the most awesome experiences sometimes, but yet I know that you two broke the chains and walked away with a whole heck of a lot of planning and some deadlines that you put in place for you. So can you tell us why the heck did you walk away from it all in the first place?
Yeah, when we were both 37 at the time, and we'd had a number of different changes in our lives together. Our relationship kind of had its ups and downs, if you will, and we made some refocused commitments towards each other. And in the course of that, we were living the lives that we thought we were supposed to live. And at 37 or 36, I guess, your brother had a heart attack. Betsy's brother had a heart attack, and we didn't know what was going to happen. And it caused us to stop and start asking ourselves, you know, the question of, wow, you know, our lives are a little more fragile. Are we doing what we want to do? But it wasn't until a year later, when a friend had a brain aneurysm, that it caused us to, I mean, almost literally stop in our tracks and say, holy crap, we're 37 years old. We may not live to have this dream that we always have been saving for. What next? What would we do if we weren't going to live until 40?
And when we asked ourselves that question, the first thing that came to mind was travel, because it was a thing that we love to do and that we plan to do in our retirement. But I have to say, watching someone that you love, you know, my brother, this big strapping guy, you know, always really athletic in his life, to be brought low by something like this and almost die. And then to have our good friend who mirrored us in so many ways. I mean, she and her husband were married, lived in a townhouse a mile away from us. They had a dog. I mean, really scary, scary similarities. And when you look at that and see what happened to them and how your life can be turned upside down from forces outside your control, it makes you start appreciating every single moment that you have and deciding, I am not going to let my life just pass me by, and I am not going to play by someone else's rules. I'm going to make the most of the opportunity that I have been given.
And I'll say, Joel, that the most important thing that came out of that was not just the realization that we reached the point where, you know, we wanted something bigger and that life is short, but that we asked ourselves that question, the next step, which is, what would we do differently? And that is what changed our lives. And it was that evening. I mean, you know, it sounds so dramatic, but it was literally one evening over drinks with friends where we asked that question and we decided that we would take a year off and travel the world. The next morning, we put a deadline on it. We literally put the date of when we were going to leave, and we started planning the very next day. Those are the things that were the difference, was taking action immediately and setting a deadline. And without those two things, I can almost assure you, we'd probably still be in the same jobs we had before, living the same life, which was pleasant enough.
And, you know, that's the thing that we say to people all the time when they say, gosh, you know, you must be, you know, so different, or I don't know how you could do that. I could never do that. You're so lucky. It's really not that, because there is no one out there who doesn't know how to dream and doesn't know how to wish for wonderful things in their lives. But there is a small shortage of people who will actually take action to make that happen. And I think that's the only difference between us and other people. It is the only difference.
So the process, though, took a while. It took about 2 years, though, from the point where you made that decision to when the deadline hit. So you had a couple of years to save and to plan. Even though you were taking action the entire time, you were still living a similar life to what it was that you were not trying to escape. But, Betsy, you talked about control and having more control over the things that we can control, because a lot of things are completely outside of our control, and we can get blindsided by a truck, literally or, you know, figuratively, if some event happens in our life. So as you prepared to make this huge transition to a life of simplicity, a life of more meaning and purpose, how did you make that 2 year transition?
Well, first of all, it's funny that you say that our life went on as it did before, because it absolutely did not go on as it did before. And I think you were probably expecting me to say that. Our life changed dramatically from that moment.
Yeah.
From the moment we made the decision.
September 1st, 2008.
Yes. Yeah. We started seeing everything in a whole new light. Our spending was different. Our socializing was different. The way we interacted with each other was different. We had this heightened awareness of everything around us, and we started getting rid of all the things that were standing in our way. Everything that didn't focus on this new dream, this goal of ours, this ambition, we realized that it was fluff. And, you know, in the beginning, it was hard to think about giving some of those things up. I mean, cable TV. And I'm not a huge television watcher, but I did enjoy television. And I thought, wow, can we really give this up? And then I started thinking, well, if I'm planning on going around the world, do I really think I'm going to be sitting on my rear end watching TV? Probably not. So it doesn't fit that life, so let's get rid of it. And what I thought was going to be really challenging turned out to make me even more focused on our dream.
Yeah, we started getting rid of things, and it wasn't just the things in our home. It was relationships that weren't working. It was, you know, the aspects of our lives that we weren't particularly happy with at the time. Our lives changed that day. We began going out and structuring our jobs differently. We began structuring our life differently in terms of where we spent our time.
Our commitments.
Our commitments and the people that we wanted to spend that time with in those commitments. So we redoubled our efforts towards the people that we really cared about, that were supportive of us, in spite of the fact that we were stepping out of, you know, what they considered a normal life, you know, at the time. And so, but also we started getting rid of all our stuff. We decided over the course of those 2 years, we were going to sell everything we owned. So we began the process where every week we would sell something on Craigslist, get rid of it on eBay, get rid of it on some type of sale, whether that's a garage sale, a, you know, reverse birthday party, whatever. We had all these ways. And so every week we got rid of things. Our life became much, much simpler over the course of that time frame, but not just in terms of stuff, also in terms of how we thought and how we spent our time.
That reverse birthday party is a new concept to me, although I think I've got a good idea. I'd like to hear a little bit more about that, too. And, of course, your experience over a couple of years of literally getting rid of all your stuff definitely qualifies you to run a declutter clinic, which we'll talk about in a little bit, too. But, Warren and Betsy, you two, both of you, I get this question a lot because I've talked about in the past streamlining, simplifying, organizing, whatever you want to call it, your relationships. And we, the three of us, we're pretty extroverted folks. We're not shy people, and we don't have a difficulty forming new relationships or cultivating them. But at the same time, when I went through this personal renaissance of mine about 4 years ago, I realized that there were some relationships that were toxic that I needed to get rid of. People were holding me back, maybe not intentionally, but that was the end result of it. And there were other relationships that simply weren't benefiting me or the other person who was involved. And a lot of people ask me, so how do you do that? Because that's incredibly difficult, especially if there's decades long of history. How did you two break some of those relationship bonds that you might have had for a really long time with folks?
Well, what was really surprising to me was the knowledge that I had been maintaining a lot of these relationships that were on life support or needed to be on life support. And once I started withdrawing that support, they just went away. And that's the thing, is that a lot of relationships are naturally on, they go through a cycle. And it's only when you're trying to keep them alive, like, oh, we've got to get together for, you know, once a month, or I should call her, or, you know, those kinds of things. If the other person is not really trying, you can let those relationships go. But in other instances, you actually have to have a conversation and say, my life is going in this direction, and I'm really sorry that you're not happy for me and can't support me. I think you probably understand why it's really hard for me to be friends with you because of that.
Yeah, I think that's worked out well. And we've, you know, sometimes you're the other side of that. You are the negative towards someone else's response, you know, towards how the relationship is going, and they no longer want to interact with you. And so you have to accept that. You have to accept the fact that your change, and in this case, our change to do something completely different, alienated some people. And they no longer wanted to be friends with us because it meant something different to them. Whatever that was, there was no judgment, but they chose not to be friends with us anymore. So they had those difficult conversations, or they just didn't call. And you have to accept that your life may change. And as it does, those around you may not always think it's for the better, and they may decide to move on. You can't be responsible for maintaining all of those and owning responsibility for keeping every relationship you've ever had alive.
And there's also the very practical scenario that as we started dialing down our budget and changing our entertainment options to better fit with saving for this big trip, the friends we had before that were much more big spenders and always wanting to go out and doing these big things, we can't ask them. I mean, we can ask them to change, you know, to still be able to hang out with us. But if they don't want to, that's not their responsibility. We're changing our lives, but we can't force other people to change theirs. So when you make decisions like this in your life, you have to realize that as you do this, other people do not have to come along with you, and you have to be able to let go. Now, you'll be surprised at the vast majority of people who do come along with you, but there are going to be some people who don't, and it's not their fault, and it's not your fault. It's just different, and you have to accept that and move on.
Yeah, I'm sure you saw the same thing, Joel. When you made your change, you had people that weren't as excited by your renaissance, probably did not use the same word you used, I'm assuming.
No, definitely not. But I did feel like some people judged me, that the changes that I was making, moving into minimalism and simplicity and this paleo diet and lifestyle that I lead, that some people took it as a challenge to them. That even though I tell people, and I'm very upfront, I'm like, I live by a completely different set of rules. I lead a very unconventional life, and therefore you can too. I don't know the right way. I just know a way that works for me. But a lot of people, even though I told them in these terms, they thought that because I was living so counterculturally in a number of ways, that I was attacking what was valuable or what was even sacred to them, because I was intentionally opting out of a lot of what was mainstream thought and mainstream action. So I did have a little different experience than you two. I felt like some people did judge me, even though I tried not to judge them for doing things that, although I was trying to be objective, I was a little bit subjective at the time too, that I thought may be destructive to their short-term and long-term health in all those different ways. I still struggle with that with a lot of people. Although you're right, I agree with you. It is amazing. You can make the biggest changes and people are still cool with it, and they'll still come along for the ride and enjoy a heck of a ride too.
Yeah, and not just that, but without our friends supporting us, there were those down days. There were those hard times when we were going through that time of not spending and worrying about our retirement and all those things that you do when you make a change like this. And there were people that just stood by us. They are the reason that we're here in a lot of ways, you know, because there were down days where both of us had trouble and we questioned it. And those people pulled us through. They just maybe just gave us a call at the right time. They said the right things. They told us that we were on the right path. Whatever it was, that helps us so much. And so for all the negatives that come with the people that don't support you, there are far more people that will support you and that will be there for you. But I agree, going back to your point, this is long-winded now, but I agree with you that there are some people out there who, for example, with us, who call us all the time telling us what their dreams are. They've been doing that for 5 years. They view us as the people that they can call and say they have a dream, but in 5 years, they've never taken action. Mm. We don't necessarily judge them, but we certainly don't take them seriously anymore because they aren't taking the actions. And that's the issue. We don't you know, necessarily put down on them, and we aren't going to push them to do their dream, but you have to commit to what you want to do and then make it happen.
Yeah, I'm sure you two could teach people about budgeting. That would be a primary way that you could help folks, because I got to say, wow. I looked at your website. It's rtwexpenses.com. I'm going to link to it in the show notes because I want people to check out the budgets and charts and pivot tables, the unsexy side of personal finances. I love.
Whoa, hey, that is very sexy stuff. Are you kidding, Joel? We're going to go down right now.
Well, here's the thing. To most people, it's unsexy. You and I, we make the unsexy stuff sexy. And I want to talk about that a little bit. One of the main questions that I have for you is, why did you and why do you still feel compelled to budget like maniacs, even though you've already achieved your dream and your goal and you continue to move it forward?
Well, what's hilarious about this, Joel, is that you got us at the end of a day, and I'm looking at my little notebook that I carry around with me, my little very low-tech little moleskin notebook, and I've written down our expenses for today, which we had a conversation right before this call, and Warren entered them in the spreadsheet, because we still track our spending every single day, because it's one thing to save up the money to be able to do something like this. I don't know about you. I want it to last for a long time. I don't want to just willy-nilly spend this and then wake up one day and realize that we don't have any money left. And I would say we have to go home, but we don't have a home to go to. So what's really important about budgeting is that once you start doing it, there's always a big dream around the corner. There's always something else you want to do. You don't save up the money for this one thing, and then that money is going to keep you for the rest of your life. There's always something that you want to do in the future, so you have to keep budgeting.
So it sounds like one of the primary tools that you use are spreadsheets, which of course makes me endlessly happy because I love spreadsheets. My ears perk up anytime somebody says the word. Are there other tools that you use to keep track of your expenses other than the moleskin and a spreadsheet?
That's really the two that we use. I mean, we've gone through all kinds of, I've tried everything. There are a number of tools out there. There's a great tool out there called Trail Wallet. That I encourage everyone to look at, but it's an iPhone.
Specifically for travel too.
It's specifically for travel, but it's something that works really well. The only reason we don't use it, we don't carry a phone. So for the entire course of the last 3 years, we haven't had a phone, which means we don't have anything. So we don't have an iPhone. We don't have an old phone. We don't have anything. So there's a lot of the tools that are out there are more for that. We have found that those two things really work the best is the ability to just write it down and spend 60 seconds every day writing up what we spent. And we now know exactly what it costs to travel around the world for a year, 2 years, 3 years. We understand how much it costs in different countries. We know when we're going to spend more and when we're going to spend less. So we understand all of that because we've captured the data. And I find that for just it's the habit. For me, no matter what tool you use, start using something and use it consistently for 30 days. After that, you're just going to become a part of your life. But I encourage you not to focus on the tools. And by you, I mean the royal you here.
Of course,
but because the tools don't matter, right? We love spreadsheets. You and I love spreadsheets. Some people may like other things. But whatever the tool is, make sure that you use it and use it consistently. And then make it simple. We're all about simplicity here, obviously, all of us. But the simple world of taking in tracking expenses, keep it to as few categories as you possibly can. You know, we spend all our days doing all kinds of crazy things. We may go on a ferry ride. We may go on to a museum. We may, have dinner out. We may buy, a shovel. Those are all things that we happen to do today. Those four things ended up in just a couple categories because you can't, I don't like to keep more than 8 categories because I find that requires me to just pick one and move on. And not really worry about it.
But to get into like the bigger overall thing, which as you can probably tell, Warren is the spreadsheet guy. I'm much more of the why we do spreadsheets person. But what I think is the key to all this is that it allows you control over your life. When you know how you tend to spend money, when you know where it's going, when you know what you want to do in the future, I mean, it becomes a tool for you to use that money how you want instead of using it as a tool to find out how you've already spent it in the past and, oh crap, how can we fix this?
Yeah, you're right. It's more of a mindset. And you're right, Warren. It's the tools are important. You need them in order to enable your past, present, and future. But just putting numbers into a spreadsheet isn't going to help you save 11 grand to go to Antarctica like the two of you did. It's not going to help you pay $200 a day when you're in Russia, which still shocks me that that was by far and away the most expensive place that you've gone. You're right. It's more about mindset and approach and that, and identifying that why and giving that, that daily ritual that you have, the fact that you spend 60 seconds and the awareness that that creates. And I know that the two of you, you're really big on this daily time and attention to your dreams and what's important to you. And you've got such a heavy emphasis on action. What were, maybe you can tell us, what are a couple of initial actions that you would recommend that people take if their dream involves minimalism or simplicity?
Well, our favorite action is setting a deadline. So whatever it is that you're thinking of doing, I'm going to clean out my garage by the end of this month. Well, the exact date at the end of this month, not just the phrase at the end of this month, you know, by the 30th or the 31st or whatever month this is. Those specific action, that specific action to me is what compels you forward. You start thinking about, okay, well, if I need to have that done in 3 weeks, then what do I need to do over the next 3 weeks to make that happen? What do I need to do each day in order to make that goal happen then? So your deadline is what gives you all your action points that go back to where you're standing right at that moment, and you can look forward to that deadline to do it. So my piece of advice is deadline.
Yeah, the other thing is why are you doing it? So what is it? So for example, we'll talk about, you know, you want to save $11,000 to go to Antarctica. That's a very specific deadline of what you want to do. You want to clean out the garage so you can park the car in it. Those are the, that's what you want to accomplish. The cleaning out the garage, the becoming more simple because you want to spend more time with your family, whatever it is, find out what the actual benefit is. Don't focus on just minimalism for its purpose.
Or shoulds.
Or shoulds.
I should do that. I should do that. You should have a reason.
Yeah. Just what is that core and why do you want to do it? And focus on that. And then I think the last thing is probably the daily mantra. You know, like the idea that, you know, for us, for example, when you're talking about saving money, it was the phrase to save. It's the idea of what am I going to do that's going to keep me excited each and every day? I have 28 days until I have my car parked in the garage and I don't have to shovel, you know, don't have to brush snow off of it every morning. Those things and counting down and having a mantra to what you're accomplishing, I think really helps you focus and get you excited towards what can be a challenging time, you know, over the course of if it's 30 days or if it's 3 years.
Yeah, I got to tell you, the deadline and having a mantra and knowing your why, it kind of reminds me, I have a buddy, David Delp is his name. He's got a website called pilotfire.com, and he's taken the smart goal setting, which a lot of people do, specific, measurable, achievable, resonant, timed, and he's added sexy to it. And the sexy stands for shared, energizing, excelling, and yummy. And it sounds like, although you two have never heard of smart and sexy goals, I'll link to it in the show notes because it's a pretty cool framework. You practice that. That having smart goals is not enough. You need to have that deep emotional resonance behind it too, and that reason why. And having a mantra is a pretty cool thing too.
Well, you also need to have it. You need to make it as you need to be able to taste, smell, and understand it as much as possible. You need to feel yourself being cold in Antarctica. What are you going to feel like the first time that you know, encounter that that morning where you wake up and it's snowing outside and you don't have to do anything, you just walk into the garage? You need to feel that, and you need to make that the emotional tie and pull to get out there and deal with the pile of crap that's sitting there keeping you from parking your car there.
You know, we actually talked about this in our book Dream Save Do. We called it dream porn. And we talked about how you have to have some kind of sensual reminder, whether it's, you know, something that you can smell, something that you can hear, something that you can see, whatever it needs to be to remind you of why you're doing this thing that you're doing. Because you need that every day. You need to make the dream that may seem far off part of your everyday now, so you will be compelled to continue the actions to make it happen.
Yeah, and for people who have read Dream Save Do, hopefully they listen to your podcast too, An Action Plan for Dreamers. The two seem like an extension of each other. I don't know which one is an extension of the other one, but I do want to hit on one of your other books called Getting Rid of It. And the main question that I have for you about this book, Getting Rid of It, is what is it? And how do I get rid of it?
It is whatever is standing in the way of what you really want. And, you know, what's so funny about this book is that we didn't intend to write it.
Yeah, we were, it became something, we were listening to a a woman by the name of Naomi
Dunford of Itty Biz.
Yeah, she had a course that we took when we were starting our business. And one of the things she said is that you know something more than most people and you've experienced it and you could create a book out of that. Why don't you sit down and write that? So we wrote out an idea for getting rid of stuff. And so we wrote down all the aspects that we worked through to get rid of all our stuff. And that became the foundation of this book.
Yeah, we actually wrote it because we started thinking, who knows more about this than we do?
Yeah, we've gotten rid of everything. And so for us, the initial book focused more on the practicalities of getting rid of things, kind of dealing with the sentimentality and some of the mental issues. But what happened was that we were getting it, that book has outsold everything that we've written. I mean, it's just extremely popular. It's a problem. But the questions kept pouring in from the thousands of readers was, hey, how do you deal with the more mental and emotional side?
I can't let go. I feel so guilty. All of those things. And that's when we decided to, well, first of all, I have to admit that so we do a little bit of house sitting around the world. And Warren has actually cleaned out the garage of one of our house sitting clients before. And so this is how desperate people get for this kind of help. And once we did this, we thought, you know, we can do more. And that's when we created Declutter Clinic to kind of be the virtual hand holding as people go through this process, because it's not easy for everyone. And if you don't know what your reason is, right, and you just feel stuck or you feel overwhelmed or you feel lonely, all of those things make it hard for you to move forward when it comes to getting rid of this stuff that you know is standing in your way.
So in case anybody didn't get the understanding of there, we are available to house sit anywhere in the world. If you need help, minimum 2 months required, we will help you declutter your house.
Yeah, as long as you live in a fabulous location and have an unlimited wine cellar and great food.
That's all we need.
That's right. Those caveats are minor. I'm sure there's tons of folks who are down for that. An in-person declutter clinic. And I've checked out Declutter Clinic, and even though physically I don't need it, a lot of people, that's the thing, when people hear the word decluttering, they think about their physical environment. Me, I always think about internally first. You talked about mental and emotional. That's what I need help constantly decluttering, because there's this constant building. Chaos always seems to be lurking around the corner, and I have this picture of me in my brain. This is starting to get awkward, but just pushing back at the void, you know, this dark void, and I'm about to walk over the edge and fall into it. That's what decluttering is for me. But is there someone specific or a couple of types of people that you have in mind for the course?
Well, the course, I mean, is first and foremost for someone that is, they typically are looking for a change. They find that they want to do something. They want to write a book. They want to start a business. But what they find is that they are always, the space that they want to do that in, where they want to create, is cluttered. And it is overwhelmingly so that they can't actually think forward towards doing and even starting the project that they want to do most.
It's made for those people who are at that stuck stage of life for a lot of reasons. Maybe their kids are leaving home, they're going to college, and they're trying to evaluate what comes next. Maybe you're getting into a relationship or getting out of a relationship, and that is a big life change as well. Or perhaps your parents are aging and you're dealing with a house full of their possessions and wondering, how can you go through that and still honor them without it, you know, eating up your own life? So, and the other thing, the great thing, my favorite one, is when you have an opportunity in front of you that requires you to move, a great job, a fantastic romance, whatever that is, and the only thing keeping you there is
the stuff.
So it's made for people who are at a state of transition in their lives.
Gotcha. And that could be any kind of transition.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Whatever you may be dealing with, whether it's, again, a physical change that you're making, or an emotional, or, you know, just a spiritual change, as you talked about, and you have made a choice that you want more simplicity in your life. That's how we wrote it.
And, you know, I love what you said about, you know, the decluttering in your mind, because that's really what it's all about. You can go and hire someone or read a book or do a how-to or even take a dump truck and raise your house completely. Yeah. And that will take care of your clutter problem for a moment. But if you haven't cleared up all the things in your head, you're still going to be overcommitted. You're still going to have relationships that aren't good for you. You're still going to have a lot of crap sitting around your house. You're still going to spend your money on the wrong things or on duplicate things because you can't find them, or to buy more space to store more stuff. I mean, all of those things still exist if you don't take care of the reasons why you got there in the first place.
Man, I cannot nod my head more vigorously than I am right now. I'm worried that my microphone won't pick it up if I keep going up and down and up and down. Totally with you on those. Yeah, I've got one more question for you. I can't let you two escape without asking this one. And this kind of gets into a periodic segment I like to call, How Crazy is Joel? Because this is the way that I think. As two people, you have all of these amazing experiences. And it's not just the travel. Because, yeah, a lot of people are envious of that. But all of the things that you see and do and the reasons why you're allowed to do it, do you curate those experiences in some way? Like filtering, archiving, organizing them, preserving the context, whether it's through pictures or, please say spreadsheets. Tell me that you use spreadsheets to curate your existence too. Do you guys do something to capture all of these best moments and then use them for your future benefit or to help other people?
Mainly for our own benefit. I mean, it's hard to know that line you live. We live our life. We live a life of travel, and that's what we do. We write books to help people and in those different ways. But a lot of our travel is for us, and that's what we enjoy. I've taken approximately, 75,000 pictures over the last 3 years and culled them down to a mere 22,000, 24,000, something like that. So those are our pictures. I go through and I identify the best ones for it. And we have slideshows with just the two of us where we go back and remember those moments. And we cull back through it and see where we were a year ago, 2 years ago. What was our life like? But then also, what was our life like 5 years ago? You know, remember that time at that party with our friends. And that brings back a whole different wave of feelings. And so pictures are probably the best way that I know that I've curated the experience.
Well, Joel, I have to give you full credit for this because, you know, we had a conversation with you a couple of weeks ago and you told us about how you curate your life experiences. And ever since then, I have been incredibly inspired and really just almost kicking myself for not knowing this beforehand because we have had these great experiences and I hit or miss journal because it seems like a lot to do after a full day of, you know, the traveling that we do, plus the work that we do, my own writing. And it just never gets done. But I am so inspired by what you've told me about, you know, curating these experiences in an Excel spreadsheet because I can do that. And so even though I have probably missed a lot of little details over the past 3 years by not writing them down now, you can bet that from now on, everything is going to be written down.
That's in a awesome spreadsheet.
It doesn't have to. You can use Evernote. You can use a commonplace book. You can use Pinterest. Again, the tool is not the important part. The fact that you spend 1% of your existence consolidating the gains from the other 99% of it, that's the big thing. And that's what I'm always trying to encourage people to do is if you're going to put yourself in a position to have all of these awesome experiences, consolidate them, leverage them, like benefit from them for all eternity. Use them to build a super awesome legacy for yourself and for people when you're no longer around. That's the why behind curating. I'm already doing all the things that I'm doing. I might as well curate and benefit from them for a long time coming. So that's cool, Betsy. I'm glad that I've helped a little bit in that way.
Yes, thank you for that. That's been the best suggestion that I've heard. I can't even tell you how long. That's the best idea I've heard in a long, long time. So thank you for that.
Cool. Small plug, folks, for those of you who are listening, Experience Curating the Book is coming pretty darn soon. So stay tuned for more on that. Okay, I digress. I do want to give you two the opportunity to answer one more question. Is there anything that we did not talk about that you would like people to know?
I would like people to know that whatever dream that they have right now that they think can happen, it won't happen if you continue thinking that way.
And in order to make the progress and the change that you want to make, it all starts with one step. One small step towards your dream. Set a deadline. Define what you want. Make sure that you're clear in what it is. And then all you have to do tomorrow is take one more small step. And over the course of time, those small steps will add up to what you want to do. But it all begins today. Right now, take a step.
Got it. So you hear that, everybody? Take a step today. Whether it's smart and sexy, whether it leads to you getting to Antarctica, doesn't matter. If you've got a dream and you want to pursue it, do something today to get there. Well, I have a feeling, Warren and Betsy, that a lot of folks who are listening are going to want to know more and hear a lot more from you. Where can other folks find you online?
Well, our home is at marriedwithluggage.com. And of course, you can find out more about the Declutter Clinic at declutterclinic.com. How simple is that? We just keep naming things by the website. You can also find An Action Plan for Dreamers, which is our podcast, on iTunes. And is there anything else you'd like to add, Warren?
No, I think that marriedwithluggage.com has links to everything you could possibly want about us, our travels, our experience, and the books that we write.
Cool. I'll have links to all of that groovy stuff in the show notes. And I just want to say thank you to a ton. I knew we were going to have fun today. So again, it's been a treat. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks so much, Joel. We have loved this. And I don't know if you can hear this or not, but right outside our window here in Istanbul, they've just started the evening call to prayer, which is this beautiful, beautiful sound, no matter what your religion is or is not. And I just thought that was an appropriate way
ending
to end this great conversation.
So thank you for everything. We appreciate it. Love being on your show.
I love the symbolism. Thanks. Hey again, friend. Did I deliver on my promise to tell you why wearing a sock tie and sweater vest in middle school can make you stronger? And how to save $11,000 to visit Antarctica? Or what? If you laughed, learned, and got as inspired as I did from listening to Warren and Betsy, let them know how much you appreciate what they had to say. You can find more about their online presence in the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM036. I also recommend going to marriedwithluggage.com and finding their social media links or podcast page to get deeper into their awesome world. But don't do that just yet. First, here is the dealio with that present I mentioned at the top of the show. As you heard, Warren and Betsy have a great online course called Declutter Clinic that allowed them to go from a full house to just two backpacks so they could travel the world. Their process identifies your big reasons to declutter. It creates a vision of what you want your home to look like before you even get cracking, and it rocks the how-to as well. I've used their framework, and I've seen firsthand how effectively it can declutter whatever the heck is mucking up your life. I want to see other people get in on the action so that they can get back to enjoying the simple things as well. And guess what? They have given me a discount code to give just to you. As of December 2nd, 2013, their course is $99, and that will be cut in more than half for a period of time if you use the discount code SIMPLE. The coupon works with or without my affiliate link for Declutter Clinic, but consider supporting Value of Simple or Smart and Simple Matters by using my link by going to valueofsimple.com/dclinic. That's D as in David, clinic, all strung together. I gotta say thank you, Warren and Betsy, for being so generous with the Value of Simple community and our awesome Smart and Simple Matters listeners. Again, that's $50 off with the discount code SIMPLE. And my special link for Declutter Clinic is valueofsimple.com/dclinic, which you can find in the show notes. You'll also find a link in the show notes to register for a joint webinar that Warren, Betsy, and I are having on December 10th, 2013. They are willing to give you a step-by-step walkthrough to embrace the clutter-busting mindset, new and healthier ways to resolve your relationship with stuff, you know, that yucky stuff, and teach you how to finally part with that memento Grandma gave you that has been hiding in a box for years and years. Not that I would know anything about that, of course. All you got to do is get an electronic device with an internet connection and you can join us. So check out the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM036 for the webinar registration link. Now, do you think I missed something interesting in the show notes? Maybe you want to let me know what is on your mind? You can use the still new voicemail feature on Value of Simple. Send me an email to joel@valueofsimple.com or tweet me at Joel Zaslavsky. Who knows? Your topics, your comments, and your thoughts may even be featured on an upcoming show. All you got to do is spend a moment to say something. Thanks again for listening to this episode. Now, go bust some clutter, grab a hold of a dream, and as Warren and Betsy say, take one big step and keep on walking. It's now time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zaslavsky, creator of All Things Value of Simple.